view before we move on into the gifting situation and see what you remember from yesterday, and then try to wrap a couple of things up there. Just wanted to mention, this is something that you obviously know, but it's good to remind ourselves. In doing these kind of discovery things about ourselves, again, something you know, but let me say, this is not an end in itself. Doing these things to discover more about ourselves must always be done in conjunction with discovering more about what God wants us to do. So it's not just self-discovery, but it's discovery in line of really wanting to do the Lord's will. And what we believe in doing this is that we have more of understanding of the things that God has really called us to do. Whatever you come out of this with in terms of understanding will be consistent with what God has called you to do if you have good understanding of yourself. God doesn't call us to do one thing and gift us and give us preferences in a different way, but they're consistent. Maybe for periods of time, the Lord would lead us to do something that's really contrary. But the basic assumption is that the way God gifts us, the things He wants us to do is consistent with the calling that He gives our life. But again, the thing is to understand what God wants us to do. So self-understanding is terrific. God's will, even more terrific, and they need to be put together. So again, you know that, but I just wanted to review that quickly. Let's see what you remember from yesterday. What are the two top bipolar parts? EI, okay, EI, EIO, huh? And, okay, and what is it, what's the focus of this? Energy, yeah, where you get your energy, all right. And then the second one is what? Okay, S and N. And that has to do with what? Where you gather, the way you gather information. And the third is? Okay. T and what? Okay, T and F. And that has to do with what? The way you make decisions. Excellent. And then the other is the last one? J and P. And has to do with lifestyle, yes. The way you like to live your life and the way people see you living your life. So those are those four. If you remember that, that really helps you a lot just in getting that process down so you understand, again, some of the terminology. And I would mention also, again, that in the, if this is your, if I can draw it up here, if your strength is in the sensing, and you're very strong in your sensing, there'll come a place where you will not probably develop a lot more in this area of your strength. You need to use it. You need to focus on it. It'll be dominant for you. But you probably won't grow a lot more. Where can you grow, though, in this area? And just the opposite, what they call your shadows. If you can start growing in that, Dave Legg and I work with Katie as part of the career development team. Dave really does more of the administrative role of it. Dave is a very, very strong sensor. I'm very strong intuitive. We work well together. Dave does not trust his intuition. Although I think Dave has good intuition, he does not trust it. He trusts gathering information through his five senses. He went out 2 months ago because he wants to grow in this area and bought a book on intuition. So he's trying to develop this. He hasn't been able to define it yet, but he's about halfway through with the book. But he wants to grow in that area. And again, if you're very strong in the area of people values, then the area you can grow in is in your shadows is where you'll grow the most. Doesn't mean that needs to be the point of your concentration, but it is where you'll grow the most in areas that are called your shadows or the opposite ones that you have. Did we spend enough time talking on page... I want to go back to that for just a moment. Page 9 in your book, if you brought your book back with you, on the dominant function. Just wanted to review that for just a second before we press on. By the way, as we mentioned yesterday, if you're not, if you don't feel the Myers-Briggs really captured you and you want to redo that, we're available to redo that for you and would be glad to do that. So let us know on that. In fact, we've already redone a couple for folks, so you just let us know on that. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. Did you have good understanding? Any questions on the dominant function? I could go through the process of how they arrive at that, but even if you can just remember this from the chart, it's quite significant. But remember, among the four in the middle, how you gather information, how you make decisions, one is a dominant for you. In fact, sometimes they go like, if you're a sensor would be your dominant, thinking second, feelers the third, and intuitive is your fourth. Sometimes they're just opposite. What your strength is, the opposite is your weakness. Doesn't always work like that, the chemistry of it. But anyway, the idea is to make your best contribution in that dominant function. And again, as I mentioned, mine is in thinking, so I've got to have time to do that. I've got to have time to think and reflect, because that's where, if I make a contribution, that's where it will be from. So it's good to know your dominant function. In fact, let me give you an exercise on that, and we'll show you that a little bit from another realm. Strangled with this thing. I want to show you something on just how we communicate with each other using the dominant functions. And let me use Volley and I. By the way, I haven't introduced my wife. This is Volley back over here in the corner with her hand up. She would raise the other hand, but she broke it 2 months ago, and it doesn't get up that high so far. So we're progressing in that. She had a really bad break in her elbow. And so if you shake her hand, shake her right hand, but don't hit her left shoulder, she'd really appreciate that. Still recovering from that. But let me show you something in the area of communication. Everybody have one of those sheets? Look at this page, page 9, and help us with Volley and I. I am an ENTJ, which I think is probably off in the corner, the lower corner on the right at the bottom. And what this says, that when you're communicating in a 30-minute conversation, that 14 minutes of it, you will spend working from your dominant function. 9 minutes, you will work from your auxiliary. 5 from your tertiary, the third one, and 4 from your least developed. That's just the way you'll tend to do things in a 30-minute conversation, if we could say it that way. Look at mine and tell me what I'll spend 14 minutes on. All the way at the bottom quarter, ENTJ. Thinking, that's right. Second, intuition, sensing, and feeling, okay? Now, Bali is an ENFP, right up above it, to the left a little bit. What's her dominant function? What's she want in the first 14 minutes, or the dominant part of the conversation? Intuition, second, feeling. Okay. Now, Bali and I are pretty close. In terms of our personalities, and so we don't have major problems, at least at this point. Well, let me rephrase that. Sometimes we don't have major problems in conversations. We're learning after 35 years still how to communicate, but we're pretty close in some things. But where will we have our major problems in communicating as to what Volley wants to do and needs, as opposed to what I want to do and need? Where do you see the problem? There's just one there that kind of stands out. The feeling, isn't it? Right here. Because this is so low for me over here, and this is one that she needs a lot on. When I come back from a conference, she's going to want to know not just what happened, but how did Bill and Mary respond? Did you get to see Jack and Judy? Tell me about this. And these are some things that she really needs and she really wants. And that's about, I would probably think about this probably the second day to tell her, because it's just not part of what I normally do. I'll tell her what I think really logically, what kind of happened through the whole process, part of the big picture, few details, and then I'll get to people. That would be my normal process. Now, as I said yesterday, I have 3 daughters, so in fact, this has moved probably on up into here for me, because the Lord is really developing that area concerning people, and which is an area I really have needed development on. But I'd like for you to do that as husband and wife together. Unless your husband or your spouse is not here. Just do that. If you could look at your type in terms of the way you'll go, your dominant function would be 14, and just move it on down the line. And you guys compare that. Let me give you a moment just to do that together. Peter?
If you're
That's what they say. They say in conversation, particularly, of course, with husband and wife, you'd probably be getting the real person. So I would, yeah, use your dominant as the one. Is that the way it is, Katie? On the eye, even though you're an eye, yes. Use it as your dominant. Let me give you a moment just to do that together. Anybody needs any help, just raise your hands. Yes,
John. We're the same in here and absolutely opposite in the beginning of our conversation. So how would you see that?
Yeah, well, see, that's what I want to talk about when you get through.
Oh, okay.
Because what you'll need to do is to give deference to each other. See, what you'll need to do, let's see, you know, what you'll need to do is to move toward what she needs. What she needs to do is to move toward what you need. And, you know, you won't always do that, but just to understand that. So when I come home now, really, I won't say this out loud, but when I come home, basically what I just try to do is to go right into people, because that's what Bali really wants to hear. She wants to hear a big picture and people. Oh, yeah. Oh, they will meet you. And that's
so
where
is
she,
that a thing, though, to go into people? That's my feeling, huh?
No, that's you. You're number one. You'd go right into it. Feeler has to do with people and people values, where
she seems like it's almost the other way around. You know, the last thing I want to do is talk about.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting concerning your.
I think.
Let's see which ones you are. Which ones are you?
I'm here.
She's here.
Oh,
well,
that's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he says. Yeah.
This just doesn't seem to be her.
What
is that differential?
Yeah, let's see that. Well, she's real balanced in here. 17-10 is very, very good balance. And 6, and, well, no, you're a, is this, who is this?
This is Leisure,
yeah. Leisure, well, she's higher in her feelings.
Hmm.
This is not marked right.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, I thought that is just.
Let Katie help you with that.
Okay.
She's not marked right on her test. Okay. And you might want to check John's, too. Okay. Yes. Dan? Uh-huh.
Does this happen necessarily in chronological order? I mean, do I take my first 14 minutes to think and then I move to, I mean, it's just kind of mixed in?
Yeah, it's kind of mixed in, and that's why any illustration breaks down. But, yeah, it's just kind of mixed in. It means in a general 30-minute conversation, that's how much time you would tend to spend on that in that way. Now the thing I was just chatting with John about, one of the things like with that you want to learn in this is where you're really different is to give deference to each other. In other words, you reach out to meet the needs of your partner. If she has a higher need in the area of people values and you know that, that's the area to go and to learn how to communicate. If he has a higher need in the area of thinking, then the wife might move toward that area in terms of what she shares. And that's just learning to grow and communicate with each other. So the key word there is deference. We give deference to one another, learning how to communicate. And this would be true, again, whether it was our partner or children. It would be true in terms of someone we're working with or discipling, is that we come to understand a little bit better what they respond to. We move to that direction. Now, again, if we're loving each other, and that's what the Christian ought to do as husband and wife or with their children, we move toward the other person's direction. So now I'm trying, I just had mentioned to John, I'm trying when I come home that one of the first things I do is to try to move into this area with Bali. I don't always do it because sometimes I'm really tired, but I really try to move into that area. And she tries to ask me questions having to do with this. These are just some things that we've learned about each other that we're working on and we keep trying. So it's just the point of understanding your dominant will come out. And the way you control it or use it in a Christian way is to give deference to it to your partner. Got a couple of other things we want to give you that we didn't give you yesterday. By the way, does anyone, let me just pass these around. These are some folders. If you need folders for your, to carry all this material in, we forgot to pass those out yesterday. But I want to do that if you, some of you already have them. Let me give you a couple of other things we didn't give you yesterday. One that Terry shared at the beginning concerning design, and then the other thing that he shared concerning understanding your preferences. And I'll let that just circle the room. That'll be a little bit more information for you.
Yeah.
Yes, uh-huh. Linda?
If you have marginal areas that are sort of closed, let's say the one that, like, for instance, we have are almost opposite.
Well, if you feel that's really you, in fact, we were just working with John here. John was saying to me that this doesn't seem right. One of the reasons it's not right, we didn't grade his test right. So you need to be, you really need to go with what you feel is really you, and particularly if they're marginal. Three questions answered different may shift the thing from one side to the other if you're pretty marginal in there, from a 10 to an 11 or 11 to a 12. And so, you know, it's the thing is to not try to put yourself in a box, but go with the one that you feel is really you. And the little descriptions on the back of the thing probably describe, the one right next to it often describes who I think I am better than the one that I came out, because the points might be pretty slim concerning that. Does that answer your... Okay. Some other questions on the dominant before we move on? Okay, let me mention a couple of other things. One thing I thought I might just give you some thought on is one we handed out yesterday. And particularly in the one chart where it said that the out of these four corners usually come leaders. Remember that question, that little handout we had? Just wanted to balance that by saying that doesn't mean that other people do not lead. Just means in terms of the surveys that they've done in the U.S., that most leaders, most natural leaders, tend to come from the four corners. But it does not mean that other people does not have leadership ability. And you'll see that also perhaps in your gifting. So if you're here, it does not mean you could not be a leader or here or wherever. But most leaders come out of those four corners, is just the thought. Let me give you one other handout now that you've got those. And I'd like to just discuss this one with you briefly. A rejoice. Yeah, well, that's, it's really hard to say, Kyle, in a serious way, whether, I don't even know that you could use the word best or better, if we're really different or we're really like, I don't know on that. I think the thing really is to discover is really, what are we, and then to grow with that. Being just alike probably has its advantages. Really being different probably has a different set of advantages altogether in terms of breadth and the ability to relate to different kinds of people. Obviously, if you're alike, then there's some ease about things. If you're different, that's probably harder and probably means learning to work with each other even more significantly and understand those differences. And two, I would say it's in our differences, it's really, it's not enough just to understand the differences, but what we want to learn to do, and this is true for the body, we want to learn to really appreciate and nurture those differences because those are God-given. And how do we take advantage of those God-given differences? I think when one becomes aware of that and those kind of differences, well, in fact, let me mention what I'd like to encourage you to do, particularly as husband and wife, if you're here as husband and wife or not, is to, as you go back and you dialogue on these things, I'd like to encourage you to work out some thoughts and plans on how do we nurture and develop one another in these areas that we become aware of. What do we do as a husband and wife to nurture one another and help each other to grow in some of these areas? For instance, if the wife, as I mentioned yesterday, has not had a chance to develop inner preferences, that would be an excellent thing for the husband and wife to talk about. How do we begin to develop you, sweetie, in some of these areas? If the husband has not had a chance to develop, but feels this is really him, how do they bring attention to that so that they can begin to develop in those areas? And, you know, you can't do everything at once, but you work out some plans to try to really do that. I don't think I mentioned to you yesterday, we did to the other group, but before Bali and I had discovered some of this, some of these things, it's just affirmed it through the years, but there was a place where we came in our mid-30s where I really felt that Bali had significant gifts that were just not being developed. I really felt she had them. And I think I felt more it was a lack of confidence and experience on her part, not the lack of the gift or the lack of the strength or this trait. And so what we sat down and did in somewhere in those mid-30s when our third child had come along is we began to make a priority for her development. And that was going to be part of everything that we did together as a husband and wife is her development. So we just began to get her in some different things. And I think she would share, in fact, Molly may want to. Some of that early part was not easy. I literally had to kind of sit on her to get her to do a couple of things. For instance, in the area of teaching, I always felt she was a really good teacher. And as it turns out now, and where we are in our life, she really gets much more opportunity to teach even than I do. Because she's really developed this area. But that was a gift that was just not developed in the 30s. You have some thoughts on that, honey, or? Honey, can you stand? I'm not sure everybody can hear you. Could you hear over there? Okay.
On the dominant thing we all talk about, just an illustration that we had a couple years ago, Daryl tends to come from the T and I tend to come from the N. Our middle daughter and son-in-law, two kids are from the from Tennessee for the first time since we've been here. So they've been flying to Denver. And Daryl being the coming from the T guy said, why don't we just take, I'll just take one car and go up and get them and bring them back from Denver to Colorado Springs. Well, that, my intuitive side said, that would work. So we had one conversation, he shared what he was going to do, and that didn't sit right with me. And so I shared my feelings about what was going on, and then we let it ride for a while. Approached him from the T side. He said, honey, have you thought about how that's going to make the kids feel? All of us don't read them. And he had not thought about that. But he thought about the logical way, which makes much more sense than taking two cars and driving everybody down, and we got lost and went on and all kinds of crazy things. It did make more sense. It was a more logical thing of doing it that way, but I come from people values. And so I learned to approach his thinking process in a way that he understands, and he is learning to do the same thing with me, and the development thing. It's just, our daughters have developed in the sort of feeling side, because we have to deal with the teenagers. We and they are going to approach him the way he responds to it, and it has to be a lot of emotion.
Okay, thanks, honey. Let me let you get you to look at this. This is, again, just capture some of the, well, it'll capture you, one of these, either the NF, the NT, the SJ, or the SP, you're one of those. And it just shows some things about each one of those persons. And also, again, probably your mate or your friends are there. We gave you all four of them. But, for instance, the NF tends to ask the question, who? And, again, primarily, it's what Volley did. Volley's an NF. She answers the question, who? The NT tends to answer, why? Because, again, they think and they're intuitive. The SJ, what? And the SP, when? Those are just some little, again, probably overstated to some extent, but it gives you just some things about them. The NT, NF again is often a catalyst. Their quest is for identity, and their Achilles heel is guilt. Interesting. Think about that for yourself if you're an NF. Guilt, and that's about 12% of the U.S. population. The NT, the next page is. Again, as a why person, they're visionary, their quest is competency, and their Achilles heel is incompetence. And again, they're about 12% of the population. As you see, the N's, are a small part of the U.S. population, 24-25%. The SGA tends to ask what? They're a stabilizer. They're often traditionalists. Their quest is belonging. Their Achilles heel is disarray or disorganization. And they are almost 40% of our population. The SP, the sensor perceiver, is asked when. He's a troubleshooter, negotiator. Their quest is action. Their Achilles heel is routine. And again, they also are almost 40% of the U.S. population. Our population is dominated by what? Sensor. A sensor part dominates our country. The facts and details more so than visionary people. Visionaries are a small amount of our population in the U.S.
So, is there a distribution based on gender that's different than the general population?
I think, there's one thing affecting gender. The only thing, if I remember correctly, the only one of these that is affected by gender is in the T and the F. Have to give deference to us. But that's the only one. All the other ones they say are gender neutral. But the but more women are feelers, more men are thinkers. In terms of the.
Are there any cultures that aren't predominantly sensitive?
I would sure think so. I would think that probably, well, yes, so Marilyn, why don't you speak to that? Middle East, okay. Let me just expand this. Excellent, Marilyn. What would be the problems of a S Westerner in another culture, in many other cultures? What would be some of the problems you could think right away? Probably too rigid, too detail-oriented, wanting to get so involved in things they perhaps they should not. How about if you're a thinker? What would be your problems? Perhaps in other cultures, not all, but... That's right. Just kind of a logical process. And Westerners tend to think along a linear lines, but most other, many other cultures do not. And it causes real problems. In fact, this would be an overstatement, but you could say this about missionaries in most of the world. The best missionaries would probably be an S. That would kind of be an overstatement. Not that an ST couldn't, but an NF would probably tend to make a very, very good missionary. And an ST, you'd have some questions about. Linda?
A thinker would be tolerant of things that didn't make sense in the other culture.
That's right.
Like with a Hindu. You're
starving.
You need
cows
walking around.
Well, then. That's right. And that's the paradigm that Kyle was talking about we bring into another culture. And so. Okay. And there was another question somewhere. Was it over here, Charlie? Do you have a question? Okay. And that's, in fact, I was chatting with Jim North, who was part of our missions department the other day. They're just beginning to look more for this now. Just something we weren't aware of. And, again, not that others couldn't be available, but probably does make a better missionary. So these are just some little handouts for you that we felt might be helpful also. Any other questions about these? Okay. Any other questions about, I don't mean to dwell on the Myers-Briggs, but I wanted you to have reasonably good understanding because it's a little harder to understand than the gifting is. So I want to move on into the gifting. But any other questions that Katie or I or Volley could help with having to do with Myers-Briggs before we move away from it? Linda?
I have one question. If you have a young person who you said doesn't develop their personality very well yet, they haven't.
Right.
Like if he would be a key, could you
Well, you could help, yeah, you could help develop more. I think what you'd be looking for in a child is more of what Terry shared, I think, yesterday. What is the natural bent that he has or she has? I think that's what you really want to try to capture. And they need a lot of freedom. Pat said, was it last night or night before, what is the main job of a teenager? That's to really discover themselves. That's what you really want them to do. In fact, what you'd want to probably want a child not to do is to lock in too quickly here. But to have lots of experiences. And yes, I think a mom and dad can provide different kinds of experiences. And then just see which ones the child really relates to. Our daughter, Kisa, 17, I would really like to think that she's going to develop in this area here. And she will, but she is so strong here. If I've ever met a people person, it is our daughter. She's not the next to the last one out of the church. She's the last one. And we have to go in and get her. She just wants to be with people. And she just has high, high people values. Will she develop in some of this? Well, she does. She is developing in some of this. But I think this will always be a preference. So I think what we're trying to discover for children is again, more of that natural bent that God has given them. By the way, they do make a Myers-Briggs testing instrument for children. We've never used it. Have you used that at all, Katie?
No, Jeff's used it.
Okay. And we do, and that is available. But we just took the regular one because we did it with Kisa when she was she 17? 17 then, so within the year. Just to kind of get an idea, and I think it's pretty much her. And she is a, what is it, honey? ENFJ. ENFJ. It looks at this point. But again, we're just trying to get her to hold that with an open hand. But that's kind of her natural bent. Yes,
I had a question. How do these blend in with, like, Kimball Hayes' studies of temperaments? Do they go along pretty well with?
Well, they do. There's a lot of different approaches, and LaHaye's is a very good one, particularly some of the later work that he did. I even like better where he kind of divided them up more than just the four types. So it does blend well with it. Probably he would obviously call this the sanguine, you know, and I don't know how some of the others would fit. I'd have to think about that. The thing we kind of liked about the Myers-Briggs over some of the other ones, as I mentioned yesterday, is the pattern of many of the instruments that are out there is that certain values come with them. People look at it and they want to be more of something else often. Sometimes they want to be a sanguine when they're not, or they want to be, what's some of the other ones? Some people don't want to be melancholic, and even though they are, and I forgot some of the, but there's kind of a value that perhaps we, more than he did, place upon them. Certainly true with what we call the Performax or the DISC, the D-I-S-C. Every time I've ever used that or been with anyone, everybody wants to be either a high D or a high I because it's dominant influence. They don't want to be a complacent person. So there's kind of a value there that I think we give it, which distorts perhaps the greater use of it. The thing we like about the Myers-Briggs in that sense is it's valueless. It just says, here's who you are. Rejoice in that and learn more about yourself. So I think it really embraces things in a sense in a more biblical way than some of the other ones. But yeah, LaHaye has very good material. Yes, Katie?
One difference, too, between LaHaye's study and Myers-Briggs is the research that's been done on it. LaHaye came up with his temperaments, which Myers-Briggs comes from a preference point. They do talk about temperament, but the research behind Myers-Briggs is much more extensive. It has been validated, whereas LaHaye has done a lot of things that does not have validation for his research. And so there are some differences in the area of statistics.
Mm-hmm. And I think Terry mentioned yesterday they redo it every 3 years, so they continue that validation in, again, not only in the Western culture, but in all the other cultures of the world as well. Okay, well, let's change over to gifting, if you'd get your material out. Did everyone have a chance to finish their material? Okay. Katie and I will be available to go around and help you if you need anything. There are probably a couple of things that came up in your material. One is you might have had a number of ties. That is, you scored the same. What I encourage you to do, and that may cause you to do a little rework, if you have ties in your traits, in this column up here, I would say if you have five that are good numbers, and then you've got three or four ties, probably five is a good number to work from. I think Ralph says six, but five is very satisfactory. If you have four or three, and then you have three, four more that are ties, I would encourage you to list all of them. And you can see this is what I did on mine. I've got my main list, then I've got a little side list over here of secondary ones, trying to get a fuller picture of what a cluster would look like. So I've got four main gifts. I've got four that I've written over to the side that I scored, you know, pretty highly on. And I do the same concerning your experiences. But again, if you just got five or so, if you've got, you know, five and then you've got another four tied, I'd just drop the ties. But I'd say five or six is what you're looking for in here. But again, just add some of those secondary ones over to the side as well, and then look at the correlation between the two. Yes, honey? I'm sorry. Okay. Get a couple of... Thanks, Kate. New, could you pass it? Okay, good. And we'll help you with those. Okay. Some other things that I want you to look for in light of this is I want you to look at the correlation between what you said were your traits and what your experiences are. You remember the way they asked the questions? The questions having to do with traits are questions, this is not all at all true of me, not very true, somewhat. You're really dealing there with who you think you are as a person. But then the other questions have to do with, I've done this, I've not done it. So one of the things you want to look is a correlation between your traits and your experience to see how much correlation you have there. Probably some of you have already done that. In fact, someone might share, what did you see the correlation was? How strong is the correlation between these two? Not much, okay. Some others. Did you find good consistency? Okay. Well, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for good consistency between what you think is really you and the things that you wind up doing. As we said yesterday, there are many things that we do that we've learned by experience, but they're not necessarily us. And perhaps we don't even do them very well. We've learned to do them, but the things up here are the things we ought to learn to do even better. Those are where we're going to make our best contributions, having to do with our traits becoming our experiences also. There was a couple of areas. How many found some things they were really surprised about in their traits? And if so, what were they? Uh-huh. Peter?
I was surprised.
Was what?
I was surprised.
What did you find?
Okay.
No experience in them. Okay. Okay. How about someone else? What they discovered concerning their traits that was a real surprise to them.
Hey, discerning
spirits is one of mine that I'm surprised about. Okay. In fact, I think sometimes when people see discerning spirits, they don't respond real well to it. And in fact, I think that was one of yours, one honey, that Molly didn't respond real well to until she read the definition. Ralph has some different. Ralph Innes is one of our staff guys who helped put this together, and Ralph has some little different definitions that you really need to capture. In fact, we'll be working in the definitions in just a few minutes. Any other surprises? Mm-hmm. Marilyn?
I think I need a clarification because I also have administration, but I am not good at management of people.
Uh huh.
I was very insecure being put in charge of the floor when the head nurse was on. I did not want that responsibility, and yet I could organize the work.
And administer things.
Yes, but I'm not good at management, and that surprised me because I assumed administration included the ability to manage people, I think, of an office situation.
Did you get into the definition on it? Well, we'll get into the definitions in just a moment, so that may help as well. Any other surprises before we... I was very surprised about something that I've always viewed myself as an exhorter. I did not come up well as an exhorter. I came up as a teacher. That really surprised me. 'Cause So I'm still thinking about that. I don't know, again, I'm having a lot of experience in teaching because of all that we're doing, but that really surprised me some. And part of it's because I've had a different definition of teaching as well than what Ralph gives to it. Kirk?
I had the same problem. I came up with the conclusion that I need to tell them how to fix his test.
Okay. Well, that's good. You might have the gift of prophecy too, or discerning spirits. Well, you know, that is an interesting point. The guy who put this together is a teacher. So if it's skewered a little bit, that may be. In fact, when we first did it, we had it in kind of a loose form, and everybody across the country that we were ministering to came up as teachers because he'd exerted so much of himself in that, you know, like we probably all would do. So we had to back off, but I'm still thinking about whether I am. Maybe I am, but it's kind of a mixture of exhorting and teaching. But the thing that I was most encouraged about, and I would encourage you to move toward, is there's real consistency between my traits and my experience. And that's what you want to see. And it comes out in your composite. Yes. Yes. And that's why the discovery of those things is so important, because then you can begin to build longer range opportunities. That's right. And it gives you a basis for saying, in fact, we're going to look in a few minutes about the things you don't do well. And it's just as important to know the things you don't do well as what you do. And that you really major in those things. So yeah, I think opportunity is a tremendous situation. When we were asked to come out and do this job, knowing some of these things, not all of them, that was very helpful in saying yes or no to what we were going to be doing. And we try to give deference to each other in the team now about what we do, based on understanding our gifts and our abilities. Let me ask you to turn to the back of your book, where the definitions are, to look at your composite of gifts, and to go back and under each one of the definitions, mark or underline, whatever you want to do, keywords or key phrases in the definitions that stand out to you as being really you. There are all kinds of different teachers. There may be different kind of administrators, as Marilyn talked about, and the management of things is something you enjoy much more than the management of people. So let me give you a moment to look at whatever your three or four gift cluster is on the bottom of page 10. Go back to your definitions, underline certain words, because we want to use those words in a few minutes. That understandable? Yeah, from the composites, right? Or you could really use your traits, either one of those. Particularly if you feel your traits are more you. Whichever one you feel is the most you, either use your traits or your composite. And then underline or mark things in the definitions. As we mentioned yesterday, every type is not the same. Although we may be the same type, there's something different usually about the way we do things. It's the same in gifting. What are the things in the definitions that really stand out to you? By the way, you will have noticed that this testing, and again, it was put together by a person with a certain view of things, the charismatic gifts do not surface. You know, if you feel strong in those areas, this test won't particularly show that. And you probably need to take some different testing on that, but this one is not designed to show that, more of the sign-type gifts.
Talking at all about.
if you want to, if you and I want to do that when the class breaks, you and I could do that.
Yeah.
Okay. You may want to raise that as a question, John, and if others are interested in it, you know, that maybe. Mm-hmm. How you doing? Finished? Or I don't want to, if you've already done this, or I think this is helpful to you to really understand, because we want to use this in a little summary we're going to do in just a moment in trying to understand more about our gifting. What are the things about it that stand out to you? For instance, in the gift of teaching, as I've marked on mine, one of the things that's really important to me about teaching is communicating truth. See, for another person, it might be preparing the work. I don't like preparation. Preparation is, I have to stick at it to do the preparation, but I love to communicate truth and see it change people's lives. So what are the things in there that really stand out to you about those gifts?
Carol, it seems like there's an awful close correlation between teaching and exhortation. You mentioned that as a teacher, it would seem that often you may be motivated by the desire to motivate others to action.
That's right. That's why I'm still struggling with it a little bit, and I may have some people may have some capacity in both, so I don't know where I'm stronger in one and in the other. But it's given me some new thought about teaching that I've not had, because I've always seen myself as an exhorter. As I've understood exhorting through the years, exhorting has to do with you want to affect people in such a way that they do something with it. You want to see, and that's, of course, that's really consistent with our ministry as navigators, the passing on of things. So, but I enjoy teaching very much as well. So, okay, well, let's work on that. Let me get you to do one thing before I do it. Go back to page 10, and on the between your traits and your experiences, I mentioned this, but I'd like for you to write some things. Write in here somewhere, any way you want to do it. What is in your traits that you're that you're not experiencing in your life and ministry right now? What is there in your traits that you don't see any way that you're experiencing in your life and ministry? You can circle them any way you want to do it. I just want you to concentrate on that for a few moments. How much of who you are you able to use in your work and in the ministry that God has given you, either there or through your church or whatever? And again, that will be an excellent basis of dialogue for you as a husband and wife. So how did that happen? Passing out something, I'd like for you to take two sheets. Everybody take two. I hope we have enough for everyone. While this going around, who would like to share maybe something they see in their traits that they're not, they do not feel that they are significantly using in their life or ministry right now? Anyone share on that with us? Nuke?
I just moved from Winnipeg, Atlantic Manitoba to Ontario, and part of my traits is strong is evangelism, and I don't have any non-Christian relationships, and it's probably one of the most frustrating periods of my life.
So you've got to figure out how to, get that door open. Okay? How many of you came up, by the way, as evangelists that it surprised you? Anybody? Nobody's evangelist. Yeah, a couple? Okay, yeah. Anyone else share on a trait that you feel like you're not using? Okay, Linda? Huh. Well, that would be something to really think about to develop. Oh, wisdom. Excellent. Okay. Okay. Everybody have this form? Okay. What I'd like for you to do here is to lift, if again you agree with your composite, list your composite gifts. You may want to space them out a little bit, maybe three or four. And on the opposite side, list some of those things right across from them, like again, teacher. List some things right across from them that you marked in your definitions that really stand out to you about what you like about that gift. For instance, again, if teaching is here, just mark on that. That's one, isn't it? Yeah. If I've got, for instance, teacher here, and one of the areas I could list some more, again, is communicating truth. And that's from the definition in the back. Mark your gifts and then go across the page and link some of the key functions that you feel are really important to you. Here's another one of mine, that I do it from personal conviction. Having to do with being a teacher. So you have to refer back to your definitions a little bit. Give you a couple more minutes on that. And this is something you can continue to work on, outside of our time together. One of the things you'd notice about, at least the way we've listed it here, we feel those would be your primary contributions from teaching right over here. Those functions that really stand out to you. It takes things out of a little bit of the general and puts them into specifics. For those of you who have Boy, you got some work done on that. Move down to the next column and list some of your high traits, but things that you have low experience on. This is what I got you to do a few moments ago. But put those down. They're high in your traits, but low in your experience. This will be an area that you really want to think about how to develop those things that you think are really you. How do I move more in these directions? Okay, on the one below that is to list those that you have high experience in, but they're really low in your traits. Right in here. And those are areas that, as circumstances and time allow, that you may want to begin to move away from. Because again, they may not be your best contribution at all. Those that you have high experience in, but low traits. And again, as time and circumstances allow, those are not easy changes to make. It doesn't mean we cannot do these, but it does mean they're probably not your best contribution concerning gifting. Just out of curiosity, by the way, how many of you feel that Myers-Briggs-wise you're introverts? You could raise your hand. How many of you feel like that? Okay, good. Oh, the reason I asked you is this is, you've been a quieter group. Last week was a very strong extroverted group, and it was hard to move on things. There was so much going on, and so you guys are just a little stronger I group. I was just kind of wondering if it's my my leading this thing, or is it part of who we are here? So, okay. And the fourth area I want you to do is to, and if you don't mind doing it this way, just don't concern yourself at this point with. Down to the bottom of page 11, miracles, tongues, etc. But the ones above that, the ones you scored lowest in, and you'll have to look both back up in your experiences and your traits, and the ones you scored lowest, put those right down in the bottom. You may want to combine the scores, or you may want to look and see if you scored low on both of those, regardless of the points or the score. Now, I'll just give you mine while you're doing that, because I want to ask you a question about it. Both. Mm-hmm. The bottom four, if you would do it that way, just for this at this time. You can use both. Experience, of course, traits are even more important, but you can do it in both. Mine were pretty consistent. I don't know where yours will be or not. What do you guys got going over here?
Well, we said the bottom four, we let Robert Tilden handle it.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's okay, good. Well, Tilton may be looking for some things to do, so. Wasn't that a sad program? How many of you saw that? That was so sad. A heartbreaker just to watch it. Oh, it was a program not 60 Minutes, but no, it was not even, it was the other ones, Primetime that did on three evangelists and just the their use of money and the way they did the ministry and the inconsistencies. And Tilton was a part of the highlight, but there were two other fellows as well. But it was just a sad deal to watch. The reason these are important is that you learn your... These are things that, again, all things being equal, you probably should not do. I don't mean by that you probably shouldn't serve, or that you shouldn't show mercy, or that you shouldn't try to discern things. But if your job is built around those things, if those are the primary things that you're doing, there are things for me that I just do not do well. Now, I was responding to a question by John. When we were in California, we were called, in fact, we were also called by our church here, and we were, I was asked to be a, well, there it was a deacon, here it was an elder. I turned down the opportunity to be a deacon in the church in California, although I wanted to serve. Do you see why I turned it down? That is not a good contribution for me. I could do it, but it's not a good contribution. They probably would find someone else who would do that far better than I would. And so I had a basis for saying no, and it's always hard to say. This guy called me, half dozen times? He just thought no was not in the Christian language. And I finally had to go to the pastor to get this a deacon to let me not be a deacon. But I would have made a much better contribution than did here. So it's really important that you understand what you don't do well, and it might give you a basis. Maybe sometime you would do that, but sometime a basis for saying no as well. Yes, Linda? That's right. That's right.
But
that's right. You do not. Excellent point. And Bali and I don't score high on evangelism either. But both of us are highly committed to I'm highly committed to mercy. But having said that, if my job with the Navigators was built around evangelism, it would not be. I would not be making my best contribution. But I sure need to do it, and we're committed to do it the rest of our lives. In fact, we have such a we have such a fun study. Let me tell you that for a second. We've got a study with Air Force Academy teachers. And we've got, within the group, we have a number of people with, a couple of people with almost no religious background. We've got some with Catholic background. 2 months ago, was it, honey? 3 months ago, we have this Jewish fella and his wife have come into the study, which is when we were studying the Gospel of John. If you can imagine the implications there, and but you know he's this fellow is such an interesting guy. He has a Bible. It's the kind of Bible he brings. It's one of those family Bibles that you put out on the table, those big white Bibles. He brings that. Yeah, he's a real tall guy. In fact, all the guys I get involved with are real tall. I don't know why that is, but anyway, this guy's got this huge Bible that he brings, and all the time that we're looking, he is just going through the scriptures. In fact, he said the other day a couple of things that were really funny. He said, forgot what it was. Oh, he told me, he said, now I've read two or three chapters ahead. Is that okay? Yeah, that's okay. And, you can read two or three chapters ahead. And then he told me the other night, he said, you know, I really like this guy talking about Jesus, because that's what we're talking about. Who is Jesus? What did he come to do? How did he come to reveal himself? He said, I really like this guy. So we can see real progress being made. This coming week, Wednesday night, we have a couple with a Mormon background coming into the study. I told Volley, concerning diversity, I think I'm about at my parameter in, so... But it's really kind of exciting to have them in there, and we're really enjoying that. In fact, I forgot how I got on that, but just kind of diversity we're facing concerning evangelism. We are really committed. We think about half the couples in the study have come to the Lord. And we can, you can just see it. You can just see their change in attitudes. And one of the guys has had cancer, and it has affected the whole group, as you can imagine, and the way his life has changed through that. So it's been an exciting process. So yes, it doesn't say that we shouldn't do these things. It probably does say those are not our strengths, though. And we really shouldn't build our primary things we're doing around those. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. But understand your strengths. Understand your traits and where you need to develop some experiences in it. Understand those things that you probably have been doing, but perhaps, and that's all I say, perhaps they're not really you. And you need to renegotiate those or maybe say no sometime. And then understand the things that are probably lowest on your scores. That those are the things you need to be most careful about. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Just in terms of composite. John?
Mm-hmm. If there's time and interest, we know it's a few years ago in our church, which is an independent, non-denominational church, very fundamental, evangelical, that most of the Christians there, including ourselves, after a number of years, really did not know what their gifts were. And still don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have round pegs and square holes and people in positions that probably shouldn't be in, folks like yourself as deacons and what have you. And I would just wonder if there's interest, if we could just maybe go down the gifts and say, you know, in the traditional church, where would you see somebody with a gift of prophecy as an example? What kind of a position would you see them serving and networking in the church today?
Okay.
I don't think anyone else is interested in that, but I would be.
Well, part of this, yeah, and that's good. You've really amplified on what we talked about. Part of this has to do with the next exercise we're going to do, and that is what roles you feel best. And we're going to start on that in just a moment, get you started. You'll have to finish it yourself, but I'll give you enough to get you started. But part of the question is answered by that, and that's what we're trying to really look at. If these are your preferences, this is your gifting, then what roles and responsibilities do you do the very best? And then which are the ones that you don't do very well? And I'll try to show you some consistency between that. And then maybe we can talk some more as well. So let me give you one other, well, two things I want to do. I want you to turn to page 22 in this book. Because I think what Linda said sparked something I just wanted to share with you a little bit. And then we'll move to another exercise. Just some myths concerning spiritual gifts. And this is, number one is the thing that Linda just mentioned. The faithful use of my spiritual gifts excuses me from obeying God's general commandments. It does not. We need to obey. You may not have my, I don't have the gift of giving. Some of you do. Someone mentioned that yesterday. Am I to give? Yeah. And I'd say Volley and I have developed that as a very high trait, but it's not in our gift, a very high experience, but it's not in our trait. We love to give, but it's just not something that shows up on my gifting. I don't think we're gifted in it, but we have developed that. A second one is I can use my spiritual gift as a way to avoid dealing with deeper character issues in my life. Again, that is wrong. Well, I'm just like this. This is my gift. No, if there's Christian character issues, they need to be dealt with by the Scripture and the Holy Spirit and with one another. And we all have those issues. Can't hide behind our gifting. That is one of the things that is kind of a downside to discovering your gifting when a person is just not growing in maturity, because the gifting can be used wrong. In fact, I don't know if you, I don't know if it says that, oh yeah, it's number three. It's more important that I use my gift than that I exercise discretion. It is not. In fact, have any of you ever been benefited from the gift of prophecy by someone who didn't use much discretion with you? Probably all of us have. Or someone who unloaded their gift on you without much kindness or love. And it's probably why God is, well, I don't want to say that carefully. It's probably why we don't discover our gifting too early. Is because, again, they can be misused, or we can hide behind them. Really important to know what our spiritual gifting is, but it needs to be in the context of all of Christian character. And number four is a very important one. Some spiritual gifts are better than others. That is false. That is false. The gift that God has given you is just the gift that He wants you to have. And we should not be envious of others, so to speak, or be or lessen the value of what God has given us. What we need to do is learn to use that. So I just want to run those by you very quickly. Let me get you to do an exercise that I want you to do for yourself, but I'll use myself as an example. if you don't mind, since I'm up front, get some of you to turn to page 14. Maybe two or three of you could turn to page 14. And then some others of you could turn to page 31. And I'm sorry, I wasn't very helpful in this book. Yeah, sorry about that. Back to the Myers-Briggs for a second. I want to tie Myers-Briggs and gifting together a little bit. So I'm sorry on that. Some of you turn to page 14. All the way down in the corner on the right-hand side, the ENTJ. And then some of you turn to page 31, which also describes ENTJ. And what I'd like you to help me look for here are some things that are consistent between the preferences and the gifting. Let me give you my gifting. Leading or ruling, teacher, I'll just give you those five. That's what how I understand myself, and I think that's pretty consistent with who I am. I'd like for you to look on page, again, those two pages, and just give me some words or ideas from those two pages that you see in my preferences that are consistent with my gifting.
Logical.
Okay, yeah. Logical?
Decisive?
Sometimes.
Tough.
Tough, okay. Sometimes. When Vali will let me be tough, I'm too small to be too tough.
Take charge.
Take charge, okay. Objective. Good. Or bad, whichever it turns out to be, huh? Okay, strategic. Structured, okay.
Fair.
Fair, okay. Good. Some things on 31. Are all these off of the first one?
Action-oriented,
yes, very good. Some other things you see there? Okay, results-oriented. Okay, do you see the, can you see some of the consistency between the two? And that's the kind of consistency you need. And I'm 53, I ought to be having consistency in my time of life. But that's what you want to see. What are the, and you could do things that are not consistent. It's an exercise. In fact, I want you to have three parts to it. We haven't designed a form, but the other one will be here. That is your roles and responsibilities, which we'll get into. How do they, what do you see the consistency between the three? So when I was asked to do the job that I'm doing now, we felt these things were very consistent all the way through for us. And I'd look for that in the next one, hopefully as well. Let me show you this again a little bit. Why would I have, why in my gifting would I have a problem with discerning spirits? I don't discern things. Bali and I will go out, Bali has a discerning spirit. Bali and I will go out and meet with a couple, etc. She discerns some things right away. And when we come back, if I ask her, she's almost always right on the button. It takes me 3 or 4 months to kind of logically work through it and arrive at the same conclusion. So I've learned to really rely upon her discerning spirit. What do you see in my gifting that would cause me some problems with discerning spirit? There's one up there that really stands out. It's in here. It's in the gifting. I'm sorry. It's right here.
Faith,
yeah. Because I tend to approach things on the basis of faith. I tend to approach, when people tell me something, I tend to believe that. And I tend to have faith in them, faith for them, and want to see them move into the future. Bali, on the other hand, really discerns some things about them real early. So it just again shows that the strengths and weaknesses of some things and how we need each other, and we need a combination as well. I'm sorry, Pete. The one that's not there is the one we're going to do right now. Okay? Some other things. I know this has been quick on gifting. You've got a lot of information in your book. Any other things about gifting before I give you the third thing I want you to do, and we'll not do it here. Yes, Dwayne?
Like on the Myers-Briggs, are there some opposites in the gifting, just like, for example, the faith and the discerning spirits, but it's almost a contradictory a little bit?
Yes. Through the gifts, yeah, there are some things that are probably quite contrary. I'd have to think about that, but I suspect there are some things that are quite contrary in there. One of the things, too, if I don't have it in the husband-wife relationship in word and ministry together, if we were to join with another couple who had different strengths and things than what we have, that makes an excellent ministry together. Having other couples who are really different from us that bring a different set of gifts into, and what that just allows you to do is to minister more freely to people. Because we all have limits, and where I'm not particularly, I don't strike up good chemistry with this guy. If I have a buddy's with me, he probably does. And that's the way Terry and I try to work together. We're a lot alike, but we're different, and we just seem to work well together in relationship to that. Okay, let me give you this one. And this is what, this will be your homework for, to take with you, because we don't have time to do it today, but I want to run through it just briefly. This is the third component having to do with roles. And I want to cover just a little bit of information with you on that before we break. By the way, the second sheet here that I gave you, I told you to keep two, is to work the same exercise that we just did here on gifting, is to do that with your roles. Once you get those figured out. Once you get that, if you would turn in your book to page 2 and 3. Here we have some descriptions of roles that are common to us. Some from Scripture, some from life. And they've Ralph has broken them down for us into, 12, 15 areas that are primary roles that are probably just out there somewhere, having to do with all the way from abstract designer all the way over to visionary builder, page 2 and 3 of this green book we just gave you. And he has a little definition up front for you to begin with. A seller, for instance, on page 3, the ability to guide others to commit their resources toward a particular product, project, person, or concept. The recruiter, right above that, the ability to enlist other people in the pursuit of a common enterprise. Now, in the back of your book, you have a more defined definition, but just a little definition up to the front, and then he's organized it into seven categories that you can see on page 3 off to the right. One of the, turn over if you would, he's got a page on page 4 that has to do with the difference between gifts and roles, and there are differences. And then on page 5, how can understanding my role benefit me? And he gives you three areas there. You will know where you fit in an endeavor, and this is part of the question that John was speaking to. Where do we fit? Where do we make our best contribution now that we know ourselves? It will teach you how to evaluate on a knowledgeable basis the opportunities before you, and then again, you will have a basis for appreciating the gifts and abilities of others, which is really critical in the body. We don't always do that real well. Sometimes we know how to hurt when people are hurt, but we don't know as well often how to rejoice over things that people do well and rejoice with them. And this is what some of the things that this will help you with. When you get over to page 12, again, I want you to look at the difference between your traits and your experience and how you can bring a degree of synthesis between those two, just as you did in the idea of gifting. Now, let me share with you here the three that come out for me. And again, I'd like for you to see the consistency. And you can look up the brief definitions if you want to back on page 2 and 3. One is abstract designer. The other is a visionary builder. And the third one is the leader. The leader. Now, again, from the standpoint of, as I see myself, these three are really consistent with these in terms of doing that kind of a job. And I say my job at this present time until they find out more about me really is real consistent with doing these. These are the things that I have to work on and do every day in terms of being a visionary builder and an abstract designer. Now, I think I mentioned to you yesterday that Terry and I traveled 75% of the time last year. I could do almost none of those last year. We were just doing practical work with people. And that's one of the reasons that I really got so tired at the end of the year. I was not doing jobs that I'm really good at. And as Terry and I have talked about it, wouldn't want to trade the experience for anything of being with 1,300 staff in a year. Having said that, would never want to do it again. It is it really, really sucked both of us dry. But I need time to think about putting things together that are out there that are not formulated yet. I need to be a person who has the freedom to look into the future and begin to build toward that structures or whatever is taken, and I need to have the freedom to lead. So those are, I think that's what you'll see. You see your gifting, some of the qualities of your preferences, and then the jobs that you do will be consistent, or they should be consistent. And then you'll have the opportunity, like on this again, to look at some of the jobs you don't do very well. They'll be down to the bottom of your list. And those are things that we would encourage you to be very careful about, that you don't find yourself involved in those. Yes, ma'am? Yeah, it's really a joy to do with your children or with friends, just to help them in this way. Well, we're over. We're 2 minutes over. Thank you for letting us share this with you. I hope it'll be helpful. I'm sure there are a lot of blanks in it for you. If we, Katie and I or Terry can continue to serve you on the phone or any way we can help you in any of this, we want to be available to you. Again, if you want to take some of the break and stay. Katie and Bali and I will stay and just try to answer any other questions that we can give you. This is a little, I'll give you this. Katie put this together. This is some of the materials that you've used, and we've got some other ones. If you have an interest in getting some of this, these materials, this tells you how to do it, and we'd be glad to, Charlie, would you pass this? Be glad to serve you in this way. Thanks again for letting us be with you.